So right now, as we're talking, there are 29 Amazon satellites hurtling into orbit. And back down here on Earth, Apple is quietly spending an absolute fortune on, like, a tiny piece of moving glass.
Right.
And meanwhile, over on Wall Street, institutional investors just pulled $2.8 billion out of Bitcoin in a single week.
Yeah, it sounds like absolute chaos, I know.
Right, it totally does. But the wild thing is, you are actually looking at the exact same invisible war.
It really is. I mean, on the surface, you have space infrastructure, smartphone components, and, you know, crypto markets.
Yeah, totally disconnected things.
Exactly. But when you look at the underlying mechanics driving today, which is May 30, 2026, every single one of those events is driven by a desperate scramble for ecosystem dominance.
Wow.
The era of just selling a finished product, that's entirely dead.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. We are taking a stack of insights from the latest Tech Ignite Tech Landscape Report. And our mission today is for you, the listener, to really see that invisible chessboard.
Because it's happening right under our noses.
It is. Okay, so let's unpack this. We're going to walk through how companies are abandoning physical hardware, why some are suddenly rushing back to it, and how Wall Street is funding all of it.
It's a massive structural shift.
It really is. So let's start right in the living room, specifically with Microsoft and the upcoming June 7 Xbox Game Showcase.
Oh, this is fascinating.
Right, because the loudest news coming out of this event is actually what they are not talking about. There is zero news on Project Helix.
Yep.
That's the heavily rumored next generation Xbox console. And it has practically vanished.
Which is a massive departure for a company whose entire gaming identity was built around, you know, a plastic box sitting under your television.
Right. Instead, they are pouring all their oxygen into the games themselves. I mean, we are talking Halo, Campaign Evolved, Gears of War, E-Day, and Fable.
Even though Fable got delayed to February 2027.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the real shocker here is that they are actively pushing their Game Pass subscription service to competitor platforms.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. You are going to see PlayStation and Nintendo logos sitting right next to Xbox games. I look at this and honestly, it feels like Microsoft is pulling a Netflix.
Oh, absolutely.
They just don't care about the hardware anymore. They just want their subscription service on 3 billion mobile screens worldwide.
Because the physical box has actually become a liability.
Really? A liability?
Yeah. To understand the mechanism behind this, you really have to look at how modern financial markets value a company.
Okay, lay it on me.
So Wall Street assigns multiples to revenue streams based on how predictable they are, right?
Right.
If you sell a $500 game console once every 7 years, that is a lumpy, low margin revenue stream. Wall Street hates that.
Because they can't guarantee you'll buy the next one.
Exactly. But if you can lock someone into a $15 or $20 monthly subscription, that revenue is recurring. It's completely predictable.
Oh, so, so.
And financial markets value that subscription revenue at 5 to 10 times higher multiples than hardware sales.
Wow. So this is basically the Office 365 playbook all over again.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, yes. I mean, over a decade ago, Microsoft realized that selling you a physical CD-ROM of Microsoft Word every 3 years was just a terrible business model.
Compared to charging you a monthly tax on your productivity, yeah.
Right. And now they are turning Game Pass into a monthly tax on your entertainment. If they hit 100 million subscribers across all platforms, that is $18 to $24 billion of guaranteed annual revenue.
That's staggering. But there's a massive flaw in that plan, I think. And that flaw is friction. Or, well, rather the total lack of it.
Oh, the switching costs.
Yeah. If you were just selling me software, and there is no physical box keeping me tied to your brand, I can cancel my subscription the second I get annoyed.
Which is incredibly dangerous for these companies.
Exactly. Which perfectly explains the absolute 48-hour meltdown we just saw over at Google.
Oh, the Gemini situation. Yeah, that really highlights the double-edged sword of a purely software-based ecosystem.
Let me break down what happened for the listener, because it was wild. So Google recently rolled out a new compute-based usage limit for their paid Gemini Advanced AI subscribers. But there was a catastrophic bug with their new Gemini Omni video analysis tool. Users were dropping like a simple 2-minute video into the AI, and it was draining their entire 5-hour usage quota instantly.
Just completely wiping it out.
Just gone.
Well, we have to look at the mechanics of what the AI is actually doing behind the scenes there.
Right, because it's not just text anymore.
Exactly. Generating a text email requires very little processing power, but multimodal reasoning, which means analyzing a video frame by frame, understanding the audio, the spatial awareness, the context.
That sounds intense.
It is. It burns through massive amounts of GPU compute. Google realized they couldn't just charge users a flat rate based on the number of messages sent, because one video request costs Google exponentially more server power than 1,000 text prompts.
Okay, so they tried to pivot to a model that tracks your actual computational load.
Right.
I understand the technical reasoning. I really do. But I have to push back hard on their strategy here. Google basically treated 900 million users as beta testers.
They absolutely did.
They rolled this out without any proper warning, and they gave users zero visibility into their actual usage limits.
It was a huge misstep.
It's exactly like a cell phone provider hiding your data cap, letting you stream a movie, and then just shutting off your service mid-sentence. For a premium paid productivity tool that is directly competing with ChatGPT and Claude, that lack of transparency is shocking.
Yeah, the rollout was an undeniable product management failure. But I think the more important takeaway is the organizational panic that followed.
Oh, the 48-hour scramble.
Right. Google didn't spend 3 weeks forming a committee to study the problem. They moved with terrifying speed.
They really did.
Within 48 hours, they completely overhauled the system.
Yeah.
They implemented per-prompt caps, so a single massive video file wouldn't wipe out your whole account.
Thank goodness.
And they stopped counting failed AI requests against your limit. Plus, they made their lighter, faster model, Flashlight, completely unlimited.
They practically gave away the farm to apologize.
Because they had to. In the AI wars right now, the switching cost for a consumer is effectively zero.
Yeah, there's no physical anchor.
Exactly. Yeah. If you lock me out of Gemini today, I don't go buy a new computer. I literally open a new browser tab, type in Claude or ChatGPT, and I'm instantly inside a competitor's ecosystem.
Wow.
Rapid iteration and bending over backward for the customer are no longer just good business practices. They are the absolute baseline for survival when you don't have a physical hardware anchor.
That lack of friction is terrifying for a tech giant.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that completely explains why a company like Apple is looking at all this cloud software, looking at Google's panic, and running in the exact opposite direction.
Right, back to hardware.
Exactly. They're retreating back to heavy, incredibly expensive physical metal. So let's talk about the massive leak from supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo.
The camera module leak. That is one of the strongest indicators of Apple's long-term hardware strategy.
According to the report, the upcoming iPhone 18 Pro is going to feature a physical variable aperture camera.
Which is a huge deal.
It is. The supplier, Sunny Optical, is already producing 40 to 50% of the units here in early 2026. But the kicker is that this new lens system is costing Apple 50% more to build than their current cameras.
Yeah, they are taking a massive hit on the margins to make this happen.
And I am genuinely skeptical about this, honestly.
Yeah.
Because Samsung introduced a variable aperture on the Galaxy S9 way back in 2018.
They did, yeah.
It was a neat trick, but they eventually abandoned it because it was mechanically complex, prone to breaking, and consumers barely noticed the difference.
Right.
So is Apple really just recycling a failed Android idea from 8 years ago, slapping a $300, $349 price tag on the base Pro model and calling it a revolution?
Well, you're right that Samsung tried this, but you really have to look at why it failed in 2018 versus what Apple is doing right now.
Okay, what's the difference?
So a variable aperture physically changes the size of the hole that lets light into the camera, just like the iris in your eye, or a professional DSLR lens.
Right.
In 2018, smartphone image sensors were just too small, and the processing power wasn't there to actually take advantage of that physical light manipulation.
So the hardware was there, but the brains weren't.
Exactly. But Apple's approach is all about the synergy of modern physics and custom silicon.
Meaning they're combining the physical hardware with the AI.
Right. Think about commoditized AI software on Android phones. It can guess what a photo should look like. It can try to digitally blur the background to make a portrait look professional.
Like portrait mode.
Yeah, but it always struggles with the physics. It blurs the edges of someone's hair or messes up the rim of their glasses.
Oh yeah, I hate when it does that.
But when you use a physical variable aperture, the optical blur is created by actual light physics. It is flawless. And when you feed that flawless physical light data into Apple's advanced computational photography chips, you create an image that standard software simply cannot fake.
Oh, I see. So AI software is fundamentally a guessing machine, but Apple is using expensive moving glass to give their AI the actual physical truth.
And that physical truth builds an incredible economic moat. Apple is explicitly targeting a $5 billion professional photography market.
Oh, they want the pros.
Yes. They want a filmmaker or a photographer to look at the iPhone 18 Pro and say, I don't need to carry my $2,000 mirrorless camera anymore.
Right, because the phone actually does the physical work now.
Exactly. Creating hardware that involves microscopic moving parts is phenomenally difficult and expensive to manufacture at scale.
Which explains the 50% cost increase.
Right. By taking on that cost increase, Apple builds a wall that smaller, software-driven Android competitors simply cannot climb over. It defends their high-margin product mix all the way through their 2029 hardware roadmap.
Okay, so Apple is using incredibly precise, expensive mechanical hardware to build a walled garden right in your pocket.
Yes.
But while they are building a moat on a micro scale, Amazon is building hardware infrastructure on a scale that is almost difficult to comprehend.
Space.
Yes, I'm talking about orbital space. Mm-hmm. So on May 29, Amazon launched 29 of their LEO internet satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't just send them up on a standard rocket. They used a United Launch Alliance Atlas V551. That is a beast of a vehicle with five solid rocket boosters.
It's a massive deployment of capital, and it marks their seventh production batch just this year.
Right. I used to look at the satellite internet race like a game of musical chairs, but it's really more like a high-stakes real estate hostage situation.
That's a good way to put it.
Because Amazon currently has just over 200 satellites up in orbit. But they are staring down a brutal FCC regulatory deadline of July 30, 2026.
The use it or lose it rule.
Exactly. The FCC has told Amazon, if you don't deploy 50% of your planned 3,236 satellite constellation by that date, which means getting roughly 1,600 satellites online, we are going to revoke your spectrum allocation entirely.
Wow.
The clock is literally ticking.
And the FCC enforces those rules because orbital slots and radio frequencies are finite public resources.
Right. You can't just hoard them.
No. A company with deep pockets can't just claim the airspace above the Earth and sit on it to block competitors. You either build the infrastructure or you forfeit the territory.
But this is what I don't understand. Why is Amazon even bothering to fight this war?
What do you mean?
Well, Starlink already has over 6,000 operational satellites. They have a massive five-year head start. They're using optical laser links to beam data between satellites at the speed of light.
True.
From a consumer perspective, the war is over. How does Amazon possibly justify burning billions of dollars just to be a distant second place?
Because Amazon isn't building a satellite internet company for consumers.
They aren't.
No. They are building a space-based extension of AWS Amazon Web Services.
Oh, the cloud.
Exactly. Think about the underlying mechanism of edge computing. Let's say you have an offshore oil rig or a remote lithium mine.
Okay.
They generate terabytes of data every single day from thousands of sensors monitoring temperature, drill pressure, safety systems, all of it.
So massive amounts of data in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Now, Starlink would just act as a dumb pipe, trying to beam all that raw, heavy data back to a server on land to be processed.
Which would be slow and incredibly expensive.
Exactly. But Amazon's hidden playbook is ecosystem integration.
How does that work?
Amazon can drop an AWS edge computing node, basically a rugged mini server brain, right onto that oil rig.
Right.
The mini brain analyzes the terabytes of data locally in real time. It figures out if the drill is overheating, and then it only beams the vital insights up to the LEO satellite constellation.
Which then pipes it directly into the global AWS cloud.
Precisely. Starlink simply does not have the massive enterprise-grade cloud computing pipeline that Amazon has spent the last two decades building.
That is wild. So Amazon isn't selling you a Wi-Fi connection in the woods so you can watch Netflix.
Not at all.
They're selling a multinational corporation a closed-loop computing pipeline that works anywhere on the surface of the Earth.
And with a $2 trillion market cap, Amazon has the patient capital to run this LEO satellite service at a massive loss for years.
Just to bleed out the competition.
Exactly. They can underprice Starlink on the data transmission just to lock enterprise clients into expensive AWS cloud contracts. It is the exact same aggressive strategy they used to completely dominate e-commerce in the 2000s.
Wow. You just hit on the connective tissue for all of this, I think. Patient capital.
Oh, absolutely.
You do not build 1,600 satellites or design custom variable aperture lenses without Wall Street backing you. Building an ecosystem requires staggering amounts of money.
It does.
And right now, institutional money is aggressively picking winners and losers. So let's look at what is happening with the crypto markets versus AI.
The capital rotation we are seeing right now is just a masterclass in how institutional investors evaluate risk versus reward in a high interest rate environment.
The numbers from May 14 to May 29 are just stunning. We witnessed a historic 9-day streak where U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs completely hemorrhaged $2.8 billion.
That's a massive outflow.
And Bitcoin's price dropped down to $73,445. But at the exact same moment, traditional equities, specifically the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, surged to record highs.
Driven almost entirely by AI infrastructure.
Exactly. Stocks like NVIDIA and AMD, the companies that actually build the computer chips.
So what does this mean for the listener who has crypto wallet? Are retail investors just left holding the bag here? Did the whole Bitcoin ETF experiment just fail?
No, the experiment hasn't failed, but it is undergoing a brutal reality check regarding fiduciary duty.
Fiduciary duty. Unpack that for us. Imagine you are a portfolio manager for a massive pension fund. Right now, the Federal Reserve is keeping interest rates high, sitting between 5.25 and 5.50%.
Okay.
That means the government is basically paying you over 5% just to sit on cash in risk-free treasury yields.
Right. If you are getting 5% for doing absolutely nothing, any risk you take has to have a massive potential payoff.
Precisely. So when that portfolio manager decides to take on risk, they have a choice. On one hand, they can buy Bitcoin.
Which is volatile.
Very. Structurally, Bitcoin is non-yielding digital gold. It doesn't pay a dividend, it doesn't generate quarterly earnings, and its regulatory future is always slightly murky.
Right. And on the other hand?
On the other hand, they can buy into an AI infrastructure company like NVIDIA. NVIDIA isn't selling an abstract promise. They are selling physical data center chips that are generating billions of dollars in actual auditable cash flow right this second.
It's tangible.
Exactly. When a manager has to answer to a board of directors, the concrete reality of AI profit margins is going to decisively beat the speculative nature of crypto.
It is the ultimate pivot from abstract theory to hard cash flow.
It is a capital rotation, not an execution. We have to remember that even after that $2.8 billion outflow, those Bitcoin ETFs still hold a staggering $94.25 billion in assets.
That is still a mountain of money.
It is. That massive concentration provides a very strong price floor. The broad expectation on Wall Street is that this consolidation phase will last until Q4 of 2026.
Why Q4?
That is the window when the Fed is expected to finally signal significant rate cuts. When rates drop, that risk-free cash becomes a lot less appealing.
I see.
At the same time, AI stock valuations might stretch so high that they become too expensive, pushing institutional capital to start looking for high-growth alternatives like Bitcoin once again.
So bringing all these massive threads back together, we have covered a truly global landscape today.
We really have.
We saw Microsoft abandoning the physical console in the living room to push Game Pass subscriptions to billions of mobile screens. We saw Google scrambling to rewrite their AI infrastructure in 48 hours just to keep their software subscribers from jumping ship.
Yep.
We looked at Apple going the complete opposite route, building a 50% more expensive mechanical glass moat just to protect their hardware margins from AI.
A literal physical wall.
Exactly. We watched Amazon launching rockets, fighting an FCC stopwatch to build a space-based AWS pipeline. And we saw Wall Street rotating billions of dollars out of the abstract promise of Bitcoin and into the very concrete cash flow of AI infrastructure.
When you lay all of these mechanisms out side by side, the meta pattern is just undeniable.
Mm.
Every single major player in the tech industry in 2026 is fighting a war of attrition, and the ultimate prize is locking you into an ecosystem.
And that is exactly why taking the time to unpack all of this matters to you, the listener. If you only read the headlines, it just looks like a chaotic stream of product announcements and stock pickers.
Right. It looks like noise.
But when you understand the mechanisms behind the headlines, when you understand how edge computing works or why Wall Street values a subscription over a physical product, you are actually seeing the invisible chessboard.
You're seeing the big picture.
You understand why you can't buy an Xbox console anymore, or why the camera on your new iPhone suddenly functions like a professional piece of optical equipment.
But, you know, if we look closely at how that chessboard is arranged, it leaves us with a rather profound dilemma to think about.
Oh, what's that?
If the entire tech industry is structurally moving away from standalone, fully functional hardware and moving toward these cloud-dependent ecosystems, what actually happens to digital ownership?
Oh, wow.
Right. Think about the device sitting in your pocket or on your desk right now. If that $1,400 phone, or the console in your living room, or the AI assistant you rely on every single day requires an ongoing monthly fee and a remote Amazon server in space just to unlock its basic features, do you actually own your technology anymore?
That's a scary thought.
Or are we slowly being transitioned into a world where we are just renting access to our own lives?
Now, that is a question that completely changes how you look at the screen in front of you. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the why and the how behind the tech you use every day, because as we've clearly seen today, the simple transaction is a thing of the past. Catch you on the next one.